We have lots of water up here, apparently. So our fall theme is heritage and legacy. You can see the little frame that we put around the center of the order of service to indicate something of that nature of the theme. When Roger first proposed the theme to me, I was quite inspired by it, mainly because I've done a lot of genealogy research on my family, and I thought I'd be able to weave it into a sermon. So I also wove my family into the order of service. On the inside is my grandmother Lucy, who I named myself after. This is my father's father. And on the front are my grandmother Adele's parents, Alexander Jean Rebert and Catherine Peyron. And you'll learn more about them later on in the service. My father actually got me started in genealogy research because he had a copy of a genealogy report that had been done in the 50s. His aunt had commissioned it because she wanted to join the DAR. So she hired a genealogist to prove that she was qualified. And lo and behold, the genealogist found that she was. My father has an interesting family stories. He's sort of a riches on one side, rags on the other. His mother's, the Adams, came from a long line of landowners and well-to-do people. His father's side, the Bunch side, were more con men, alcoholics, and hard-shell Baptists. Now, and he'll tell you all about it in his stories. He wrote a 3-volume autobiography, and I give him a lot of credit for the way he really made the stories of his ancestors come alive. It's interesting, on the Adams side, the genealogist was able to take us back to a fellow, Lemuel Adams. I can't remember exact era that he lived, but everybody was tantalized by the possibility that he was related to the Adams, right? John Adams. And there was a family story that Lemuel Adams' mother was frightened by a bear, and somehow this caused us to never know that John Adams was her father. So family stories and the change in family stories are an important part of what happens when you engage in genealogy. Now, maybe some of you are big fans of the genealogy shows like I am, big fan. There's Finding Your Roots on PBS with Henry Louis Gates, and then there's Who Do You Think You Are, which is on TBS and appears sort of irregularly. I have to admit, I watch reruns of Who Do You Think You Are because I enjoy these stories. I enjoy their experience so much. Often the person on Who Do You Think You Are will start out with a family mystery, like nobody knows much about this side of the family, or some family story. You know, we had a Cherokee grandma back 7 generations. And so the professional genealogists and experts will help this person uncover their family stories. The show is produced for the biggest emotional impact. But they don't need to make things up. Rosie O'Donnell goes back to Ireland and sees the poorhouse where her ancestors had lived, and that they were one of the lucky families who got to immigrate to the United States while many more starved during the potato famine. In another show, an actor finds out that he always felt like an outlier in his family because he's the only artist, and yet he found out that he comes from a long line of architects and performers. At the end of these shows, they always have some scene where they're visiting some site and reflecting on what they've learned in this process. And you can almost see the emotion as they're processing and integrating this information of their ancestors into what it means for their lives now. They're great stories. But why do we care? Why do we care about our ancestors and who they were? As humans, we're meaning makers. We're story creators. We're so much into making meaning that we will make meaning of the smallest little thing, and we will hold it in our heart as if it's true. This is particularly true about family stories. Making sense of our family stories really helps us understand who we are by what we've been given by our ancestors. and we can draw strength from this heritage, whether good or bad. One especially poignant episode was with Bryan Cranston, the actor from Breaking Bad, who learned that going back three generations, the men in his life, his father, grandfather, grandfather before, great-grandfather, had abandoned their families, their wives, and children. And as he was absorbing this information, he took this vow that he would end that. It was a very powerful moment. You can imagine what it would be like to learn that, to take that in, and to reclaim the goodness and the possibility of your family. Now, the current genealogy craze, some people credit it back to the book and TV show Roots. How many of you remember Roots, the Alex Haley? Oh, yeah, great. Alex Haley, an African-American who wrote a book about his ancestry, and he believed that he was able to trace back to an individual, Kunta Kinte, who was his ancestor in Gambia in Africa. Part of the reason why he believed this is that he did enough genealogy to know that he came from Gambia. He traveled back and he met with a wise man who proposed to him this person as his ancestor. And he ran with it. Incredibly popular book and TV show. But systematically after that show came out, it was debunked by genealogists and historical experts as it wasn't possible to really remember 200 years ago the name of the ancestor in Africa who came over to this country. But does it really matter? Does it really matter that that story was debunked? Many of us are longing for identity and connection and understanding where we came from. And the Roots book and TV show lifted up these stories particularly important to African Americans and gave them a sense of pride in their origins, an awareness of their ancestry that had been wiped away by hundreds of years of slavery. Race comes up a lot in genealogies. You heard in the Alice Walker poem, her great-grandfather had raped her great-grandmother at 11, and her family line came from that incident. It's quite possible that the white man who raped the African-American woman was the owner of the woman. It was very common that white slave owners would have sex with, non-consensual sex with, and have offspring that were of mixed race. We learn a lot about our connections to slavery and racism in understanding our genealogy. In the Finding Your Roots show, Ben Affleck, the actor, was on the show, and his ancestry uncovered that he had slave owners in his past, and he refused to participate in the program unless they removed that piece. Now, it's an interesting question of how we could be tainted now who we are by having slave owners in our ancestry. I have slave owners in my ancestry. That line from my father's mother goes back to North Carolina and the McNary family, who owned 65 slaves in Guilford County, North Carolina. I am not a slave owner myself, but I'm descended from them. And I have benefited from slavery through what has come down to me through my family. But I would argue that everyone alive on this earth during slavery benefited because things, goods, and services were a lot cheaper because a large percentage of the population were not paid for their work. Race classification comes up a lot, and before there was DNA analysis, it had to be based on the looks. Virginia had a law on the books until the 20th century that said if you have one drop of African blood in you, you're considered to be African, considered to be black. And in some of the genealogy shows, they'll trace back somebody's family through the censuses, and in one census they're white, the next census they're black, the next census they're mulatto, oops, then they're back to white again. Kind of shows you how vague this whole concept of race is and what a construct we make of it. I think one of the questions that when we think about our ancestry is how much of who we are comes from our ancestors. Scientists really love this question, the nature versus nurture question. The philosophers of the Enlightenment had this idea of the tabula rasa, the blank slate, that we're born with nothing in our awareness, and we learn everything by our environment and how we live our life and the things that we face in our lives. But now scientists kind of believe it's 50-50 nature and nurture. And I think that's probably punting on their part because it's so interwoven. You have certain genetic inheritance, and yet your genetic inheritance causes the way you engage in the world, which influences you. Your parents share your genetic inheritance. It's a very circular process. You can't really separate out nature versus nurture because they inform each other so much as we grow up in our lives. I think we want to know our origins, partly because we're longing for identity and connection. The hymn we sang says, "We are not our own. Earth forms us, past and present people near and far." Of course, when DNA became much more prevalent, it changed the whole playing field. I learned a lot about DNA, particularly from this book I read by Carl Zimmer, She Has Her Mother's Laugh. I highly recommend it if any of you are interested in learning more about genealogy and genetics, how it affects us in our lives and as humans. So I learned that 50% of DNA comes from each parent. Yeah, I pretty much knew that. So you're not going to get 60% from your father and 40% from your mother. You're going to get 50-50. But there's a process called mitosis, I learned about biology too, reading this book, that happens when eggs are developed in the fetus in the womb. Female eggs are developed while they're developing inside their mother's womb. And in sperm, as the sperm are in sort of the preparatory zone before they get utilized, there's a mitosis process that sort of randomly decides which chromosomes they're going to take on and which they're going to leave behind. So your mother may be 50% Swedish and 50% Taiwanese, and you may only get 10% of her Swedish, the DNA that comes from the part of her that's Swedish. So there's a random component. And of course, we see this in African-American families where children have different skin tones. We see it in a family where one kid pops out with blue eyes when everyone else has brown eyes. The recessive gene idea, but also this randomness. The other thing I learned is that DNA used for ancestry is not absolute. It's actually more of an art than a science. And these companies that test your DNA, they have to have a reference population. So if they want to say how much of you comes from the British Isles, they have a reference population of people who've lived in the British Isles for generations. And they compare your DNA to their DNA. They only know what it means, the DNA of the British Isles, by the people who they think have that basic part because they've lived in that world, part of the world, so long. DNA tests are becoming more and more popular. I've had two myself, and I'll tell you about those in a minute. So what do people hope for when they have a DNA test? How many of you have done the DNA analysis? Oh, yeah, pretty good. So what do you hope for when you take that test? Maybe an affirmation of something you thought about yourself or something that you had internalized about yourself. Maybe a sense that you have a worthy background, whatever worthy is. Actually, what you want out of the test really depends on who you are. White supremacists take the test because they want to prove that they're 100% white, whatever that is. And when it turns out that they maybe have some DNA that comes from a Jewish strain or an African-American strain or an Asian strain, of course, it's a conspiracy, and these companies are designed to work against them. Now, liberals have a tendency to want to not be 100% European. How many of us have this little secret desire that we had a Cherokee grandma or there's a little drop of African blood? Interesting. a longing to have a deeper connection to the world, a longing to have more variety in who we are. Interesting and worth reflecting on. There's these wonderful series of videos that you can find on YouTube where people get their DNA results, and they've organized them by ethnic groups. So you can see a video called Irish people get their DNA results, or you can see one that says Asian people. And it's really interesting. And in one, the Asian people get their DNA. It was a mixed group of people from different aspects of Asia, from what they knew about their ancestors. These were all Asian Americans. And one man who thought that he was Laotian and possibly Chinese found out he was Vietnamese. And you could just see on his face, like, you know, trying to figure that out. Because he probably thought he liked, you know, a certain kind of food, right? Because he was that ethnicity. One of the things that I noted in the TV show Finding Your Roots, it's the one of the genealogy shows where they add the DNA component. After they do the family tree, then they add in the DNA. And when their African-American guests are on, the DNA is always kind of a question of how much European DNA do they have. Sometimes it's more than 50%. So here's a person who's identified as African-American finding out that 65% of their DNA is European. Interesting process for them to internalize that. As we talked about with the Alice Walker poem, the European DNA is likely the result of slave owners raping or having sex with their slaves and the resulting children. I think about that moment when you have your DNA result and you're the descendant of both the slave owner who raped the slave and a descendant of the slave. A complex genealogy that is lived, that is the lived truth for a lot of people in our country. Genealogy is particularly difficult for African Americans because slaves' names did not get recorded anywhere, just their gender and their age, until after the emancipation. But sometimes in Finding Your Roots, they're able to go back a little bit farther. The classic story that I think many people are aware of is about Sally Hemings and Thomas Jefferson. Sally Hemings was Thomas Jefferson's slave and bore 6 children by him, proven in 2000 to be true based on DNA analysis of her ancestors. And yet the Thomas Jefferson family and foundation refused to acknowledge that they were descendants of Thomas Jefferson until these DNA results came out. And now if you go to his home in Virginia, Monticello, there's a whole display about Sally Hemings and the role in his life and the story of the discovery of a whole new family line from Thomas Jefferson. Now, we have this focus on race, focus on difference in our DNA, but the truth is we share 99.5% of our DNA as humans. We all have 99.5, the same DNA, everyone on this earth. So what we're doing is talking about a very small difference. What the DNA tests really do is look for variants. They find how your variants from the standard match the reference panels. So I'm starting my 6th year with you this church year, and I think I'm comfortable. I think I'm ready to share my DNA with you. Now, my DNA, actually, the results of my DNA depend on who you ask. I started out with National Geographic. They have this big research thing, nonprofit, wanted to support that endeavor. So National Geographic says I'm 43% Mediterranean, 39% Northern European, and 18% Southwest Asian. So I had to study the 10-page printout to understand my DNA to find out that this is a long-term DNA analysis. So we all started in Africa, right? We all started in Africa. And so my ancestors apparently moved through Southwest Asia and then on up into Europe. So that's how I came to have that particular combination of DNA. Now, if you want the really, really, really long term, which National Geographic gives you as well, I'm 94.4% Homo sapien, 3.3% Denisovan, and 2.3% Neanderthal. I know when the Neanderthal comes out, and probably you do too. I am actually an outlier. I have a lower percentage of Homo sapien than most people do. I hope you still love me knowing that. So then I thought, well, this is nice, but I want to know if I'm, you know, French, right? So I went to Ancestry.com. And they know what people want. They give you the detail that you're looking for. But I have to tell you, I went on and I did it. You know, you wait like 6 weeks and they send you an email. And I clicked on it and made a lot of sense. And then it was a couple of months ago. And then in preparation for the sermon, I clicked on it again. There's an update. So I clicked on it and I'm like different. So let me tell you what I got here. First pass, I'm 63% British Isles. Northern Europe, 29% Southern Europe, and 8% other. My father's English, my mother's French and Italian. That sounds good. Then here comes the update. So my British Isles has gone down to 41%. The Southern Mediterranean has completely disappeared. I'm now 40% French, 4% Irish, and 3% Swedish. Huh. It's kind of a bit disconcerting. So now I check every day to see what ethnicity I am. It's a reminder that this work is an art and not a science. So obviously I didn't change. My DNA didn't change. And what does this information say for me? That I'm a European mongrel, right? All of Europe is related if you go far back enough. In the Zimmer book I read, he talked about the Charlemagne Club in America. It's people who can prove that they're related to King Charlemagne from like 800. He was the head of the Holy Roman Empire during the Dark Ages. You have to prove this ancestry. But it's like almost everybody in Europe is related to Charlemagne if you go back far enough, right? And I imagine, what do these people talk about when they get together? So you all can, all of you with European ancestry can join the Charlemagne Club, I'm sure, if you'd like to do that. So, you know, I love those genealogy shows, and I kind of imagine what it would be like to go on one and, you know, what I would discover. But I actually had my own genealogy family history moment given to me as a gift simply by the choices that I've made and experiences that I've had. I really wanted to know more about my mother's side. Now I sound like a person on the show. I didn't really know that much about my mother's side. I know that my mother's parents immigrated from Italy. I know that my grandfather's father was a Pentecostal missionary who had converted my grandmother's family, and they all came back to the United States and started a church together. I also know that three members of my grandmother's family married three members of my grandfather's family. So my mother has all these double cousins, and I know that Family Tree Maker does not like those people. But in 2011, as part of my seminary studies, I participated in a study program at a seminary in Rome. One of the things that I learned that I'm the most proud of all my genealogy, is that I learned that I'm a descendant of heretics. Now, when I give our class on principles in our Exploring UU class, I always start out by saying that Unitarian Universalists are descended from a long line of heretics. The people who said, no, I don't agree with that, I think it's like this. I'm descended from heretics. I had no idea. I knew they were Christians, but there was so much I didn't understand. First of all, my grandfather's father, Peter Ottolini, was an evangelical who started out as a Catholic and went back to Italy to convert Catholics to Protestantism. That sounds like a hard job. One time he made a trip by boat back from the United States. This was at the turn of the 20th century. From the United States back to Italy, and the government of Italy turned him away because they were worried that he was going to try to convert Catholics to Protestantism. The seminary that I attended in Rome knew about him. They told me about him. I think about him and the choices that he made and the life he led, and I'm so proud of how he was willing to take risks for what he believed in, stand up to the powers in Italy. I had a strong sense of pride. But the even bigger surprise was my mother's mother, Adèle Jean-Rébert, someone that I knew growing up. The faculty member who took us to Rome was a Waldensian. I didn't know what a Waldensian was. It's an obscure Protestant sect in Italy. And we were actually living and learning at the Waldensian Seminary in Rome. When I told my family that I was going on, my mother actually, that when I was going on this trip and I was going to be at the Waldensian Seminary in Rome, she said, "Your grandmother was a Waldensian." So I learned so much, so many surprises. In this seminary and in the research that I've done since then, I've learned that the Waldensians were a Christian sect that broke away from Catholicism in 1170. Martin Luther nailed his things on the church door in 1560, is that right? 1517? 1170. They believed that people should have access to the Bible. Most people couldn't read, and you know, the church, the Bible was in Latin, and they wouldn't let anybody have the Bible. They believed that people should have access to the Bibles, and they had teachers who learned it so that they could share it directly with people. They believed that Jesus was a friend of the poor, and that he thought that people should not accumulate wealth, but should work for justice. 1170. Early heretics. The painful part of this story is that the Waldensians were persecuted for 700 years. Just like the Jews, who were persecuted for thousands of years, the Waldensians were put in a ghetto in northern Italy, and they weren't allowed to have most jobs. They were very limited in the type of jobs that they could have. They were isolated in this valley. There were forced conversions. There was similar to the Inquisition, they had to choose to renounce their faith or be killed. They were almost exterminated completely. At one point, there were 5,000 Waldensians left in the world. And my grandmother came from those 5,000. In 1848, they were granted religious freedom. My grandmother was born in 1903 in that community, in that place, with that history. Wow. How do I relate to that? Such pride I have that this is part of my inheritance. I'm very inspired now to go back to Italy, to that area. I actually visited there when I was 12, but I didn't have a clue. I didn't know anything. Now I'm inspired to go back and try to learn more and trace my roots in that amazing community. In the context of our world today and the challenges that we're facing, their story gives me tremendous strength. I try not to focus on the years of oppression, but focus on the fact that they survived. And I believe that I can draw on that strength and determination that is in me. Whatever percentage of my DNA comes from them, it is mine. It is my inheritance to draw on. And I think the lesson for me of 700 years of oppression is to never forget the long term. We get so caught up in what happened yesterday and what may happen next week. But in the long term, I really do believe that things work towards justice. My ancestors waited 700 years for religious liberation, and it came. They never gave up what they believed to be true. They stood up against great authority to hold on to their right to religious freedom. As I integrate all these different aspects of my ancestors' stories into my life, it's like working on my own story, reworking my own story of who I am in this world and what makes me what I am. I faced a lot of challenges in my life, but I also believe that I was given the inherent strength that I needed to overcome those challenges, to thrive in this life that I've given. Whether it's my nature or my nurture, I don't know. This is my story, my heritage. And these stories of survival and courage in my ancestors inspire me in profound ways. After finding out about my grandmother's Waldensian roots, I longed to talk to her. Adele Jean-Rébert, she died in 1983. She was the light of my childhood, the lifeline of my childhood. She gave me the unconditional love that planted in me what I needed to survive, the nurture. She gave me the nurture. She got something from her ancestors that allowed her to be the person that I needed and to offer me unconditional love. I paraphrase Alice Walker. Rest in peace, Adele Jean-Rébert and all my beloved ancestors. In me, the meaning of our lives is still unfolding. Blessed be.